McGraw-Hill Ascent Audio presents The Hero and the Outlaw, Building Extraordinary Brands Through the Power of Archetypes by Margaret Mark and Carol S. Pearson, narrated by Randy Kay. Foreword. In October of 1987, I had to make a rush business trip to Toronto. After I landed at Pearson Airport, I ran for the first taxi in line. From the rear seat, I could see that the driver wore a tattered Mackinaw and a wool cap with ear flaps pulled down over wisps of straggly hair. In the mirror, I could see a crusty, days-old beard. As he pulled away from the curb, he suddenly braked, turned to me, and spoke with urgency. "Did you hear the news?" I sucked in some cold air. "No. What?" "Awful. The Hang Seng stock index went down 9% this morning." In that instant, I knew the long-awaited era of global communications had actually been born. All the world, rich and poor, was fixated on the collapse of the financial markets in real time, and there was real worry in the cabbie's eyes, which reflected fears around the world. What was the story? No one seemed to understand why the markets were in free fall. What did it mean, this October collapse? Neither President Reagan nor Margaret Thatcher, nor the secretaries of the Treasury or Exchequer, nor any other leader of reputation had stood up to tell us what the story was. So, in the absence of a news story, millions of people fell back on the last usable story, the stock market collapse of October 1929, and the quotes chased each other down and down. Eventually, after scooping the cream out of millions of portfolios, the markets bottomed out, well above depression levels, because it wasn't actually 1929 all over again. Today, as I write in another October, markets are roiling as never before. Brands are being born faster than ever before. The media are glutted with much more data, news, entertainment, and advertising than they were 13 years ago. Without a good story for us to latch onto, to give meaning to the message, most of it slides by, vaguely seen or heard, but surely not absorbed. We all love stories, and we need them. From fables to novels, from musicals to advertising, we instinctively crave stories which can provide the human context for forces that are often vast, ancient, and abstract. Stories are the best teachers. This is a book about finding the right story. It provides a fresh framework for understanding how brands and companies gain and lose meaning, attention, value, and share of market in these hectic times. In 30-odd years in the business of advertising and marketing, I have met no more original thinker or articulate researcher than Margaret Mark. I have had the good fortune to work with her for nearly two decades, during which I have watched her constantly tear up the hard sod of accepted wisdom and break new ground for the great benefit of her clients. Now she has joined forces with Dr. Carol Pearson, a uniquely gifted scholar who has not only been delving deeply into archetypal studies for years, but has been applying her insights in a practical fashion as a consultant to major organizations. Together, they have fused a remarkable thesis that, in the end, is all about strengthening the value, even the market value, of brands and companies. I could not help but think of Margaret and Carol on the last Super Bowl Sunday as a fresh phalanx of dot-coms paraded their million-dollar-per-half-minute commercials in front of the nation's richest TV audience. Most of the commercials were witty, novel, and spectacular in effect, and most lacked anything close to meaning. Their millions were wasted. This book illuminates the most ancient grooves in our media architecture, which Carl Jung described as archetypes, and explains how they can be employed to bring meaning and profit to a brand. There is a nascent power here that, if understood correctly, can bring a rare vitality to a brand or a corporation. But let me point out the warning label up front. In my opinion, meaning is not something that can be grafted onto a product, particularly an inferior one. To attract and keep customers, meaning must be true to the intrinsic value of a brand, that is, what the product really is and does. Thus, the management of archetypes must begin long before an ad is begun. It starts with the development of a product or service that provides a real benefit. This idea is not new. For centuries, creative individuals have discovered the right archetypes for a brand by hunch and by genius. From the raw beginnings of advertising, they have told stories in their ads, but never before has the search for the right archetype and the right story been made systematic or scientific. With this book, it becomes both. In fact, the book itself is a new story that makes sense out of marketing brands in a confusing new world. Alex Kroll, former creative director, CEO, and chairman of Young and Rubicam. All that happens is symbol, and as it represents itself perfectly, it points to all the rest. Goethe, 1818. Part 1. Primal Assets, a System for the Management of Meaning. Brands are as much a part of our daily lives as our workplaces and neighborhood landmarks. Big, enduring brands become icons, not just of corporations, but of whole cultures. Coca-Cola not only has the most recognized logo in the world, but the logo also has become a symbol of the Western way of life. Today, the brand is a repository, not merely of functional characteristics, but of meaning and value. But if we are to identify and effectively leverage the essential elements or immutables of our brands, we must become fluent in the visual and verbal language of archetypes. The creators of great brands have intuited this simple truth. For example, superstars in the film and entertainment industry and the agents who manage them understand that their continued popularity does not hinge simply on the quality or success of the films they make or the visibility they attain. Rather, it depends on creating, nourishing, and continuously reinterpreting a unique and compelling identity or meaning. Madonna changes her lifestyles and hairstyles, but she is always the outrageous rebel. Off-screen and on, Jack Nicholson is the bad boy outlaw. Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks imbue every role they play with the spirit of the wide-eyed innocent. These identities are not only consistent, they are compelling. Love 'em or hate 'em, you can't help but notice 'em. In fact, we can't help but be mesmerized by who they are and what they implicitly stand for. In an era of declining network viewership and 300 cable channels, the trial of O.J. Simpson commanded record viewership on a continuous basis. Was it the sensationalism of the crime, the glamour of Beverly Hills, the racial subtext? Although each of these played a part in getting people's attention, it was the deeper archetypal meaning that kept them tuning back in day after day. Regardless of the reality of his personality or his life, Simpson, as a brand, was seen as the fierce warrior able to defeat any competitor. The revelations of abuse and violence that emerged during his trial led many to conclude, despite his formal acquittal, that he had murdered his wife. Instead of a popular figure, he became an object of scorn and contempt. Thus, O.J.'s story fits the classic mold of Shakespeare's Othello, the warrior undone by the destructive power of his own jealous rage. In her life and in her death, Diana Spencer held sway over the world. The power of her tale may remind you of the magnetic appeal of the Cinderella story, the beautiful but vulnerable girl who gets the prince but must live under the ever-watchful eye of the withholding stepmother. Even in the aftermath of her divorce, Diana's story evolves in Romeo and Juliet style. She breaks social convention to find love and meets with an untimely death. The case of Princess Di also shows how compelling people find the evolution of an archetypal story. What happens if the girl marries Prince Charming but does not live happily ever after? She divorces, adjusts, and becomes a great lover of humanity, motivating humankind to show its love for her. Even though Diana's life story has many chapters, styles, and reifications, it always dances around the archetypal theme of the princess lover. Absent this essential archetypal unity, she would not have captured our attention so profoundly. The story of Elian Gonzalez, the young Cuban boy who became the object of an international tug of war, made headlines for weeks in a world filled with orphans. Why did this little boy's plight so grab us? Was it the sheer drama of his having been left alone at sea after his mother and his other boatmates drowned? Did the controversy inspired by the decision to return him to his father's care, and thus to Castro's Cuba, reflect a basic conflict between the values we attach to freedom of opportunity on the one hand and family and relationship on the other? Did this controversy highlight the need to let go of Cold War thinking and enter a new time? Undoubtedly, it was all of these, and each has its archetypal theme. Commenting on the symbolic nature of the news, Washington Post reporter Paul Richard links Elian's story to the mythic pattern of the archetypal hero. Young Moses in the bulrushes and the young Elian on his inner tube are to some degree related. We expect them to drown. Such sea births seem a blessing, such deliverances miraculous. The child will become a man. Thus, Elian holds the promise of cultural redemption. Richard notes that Moses spent prosperous years in Egypt before heading to the Promised Land, implicitly raising the question of whether Elian was here to rescue Americans from materialism or Cubans from Castro and poverty. News stories that really grip public attention always have an archetypal quality, Richard observes. When the next big story breaks, we'll all be caught again, he says, because each story that so mysteriously grabs us is some version of Once Upon a Time, a mythic tale acted out in real life. Richard's point is illustrated by how the news media covered the tragic death of John F. Kennedy, Jr. By placing this event in the context of the deaths of other beautiful and charismatic Kennedy males, Joseph, John Sr., Robert, the stories called up deeply held archaic human beliefs in the family curse and in the redemptive power of the sacrifice of the most perfect man of his time. It matters little that in ancient times the beautiful youth was sacrificed in a religious ritual, not by tragic accident or assassination. Some chord in the human psyche still is moved by this story of martyrdom. Similarly, films that are box office hits almost always have archetypal structures. The six most recent Academy Award winners for Best Motion Picture all exemplify classic archetypal stories. Forrest Gump, 1994, The Power of the Wise Fool. Braveheart, 1995, The Triumphant Hero. The English Patient, 1996, and Titanic, 1997, The Transformative Lover. Shakespeare in Love, 1998, The Creator, Writer, Transmuting the Suffering of Lost Love into Ennobling Art. And finally, American Beauty, 1999, The Regular Guy as Mystic, a midlife crisis in which the dark night of the soul leads to the experience of mystic enlightenment and, sadly, in this case, death. What is an archetype? Forms or images of a collective nature which occur practically all over the earth as constituents of myth and at the same time as individual products of unconscious origin. C.G. Jung, Psychology and Religion. The concept of archetypes was borrowed by Jung from classic sources, including Cicero, Pliny, and Augustine. Adolf Bastian called them elementary ideas. In Sanskrit, they were called subjectively known forms, and in Australia, they were known as the eternal ones of the dream. Joseph Campbell, the hero with a thousand faces. Jung, to some extent, took the opposite approach to that of the behaviorists. That is, he did not observe people from the outside, did not ask how we behave, how we greet one another, how we mate, how we take care of our young. Instead, he studied what we feel and what we fantasize while we are doing those things. For Jung, archetypes are not only elementary ideas, but just as much elementary feelings, elementary fantasies, elementary visions. Marie-Louise von Franz, Psyche and Matter. Sometimes the writer, director, and producer simply intuit the archetype. Sometimes they are guided by a conscious system. The Star Wars series, as well as spin-off action figures and other products, holds endless appeal. In making these films, George Lucas has been guided by Joseph Campbell's The Hero with a Thousand Faces, which outlines all the rich and evocative stages of the hero's journey. The popularity of each episode is derived in large part from the way Lucas consciously crafts the entire series to convey archetypal characters and mythic plots. Products grab and keep our attention for the same reason. They embody an archetype. For example, throughout the ages, cleansing rituals have signified more than physical cleanliness. They also symbolize the removal of sin or shame, bestowing rectification and worthiness upon the person who has performed the ritual. Ivory soap has drawn from this well. Ivory is not just about getting clean. It is about renewal, purity, and innocence. Over the years, Ivory has changed the details of its ad campaigns, updated the cultural references they employ, and diversified the ages and cultures of the bathers they depict. Nevertheless, the central message of the ads, their meaning, has remained deeply symbolic and constant. Ivory succeeds because its brand meaning is consistent with the deep essence of cleansing. Brands that capture the essential meaning of their category and communicate that message in subtle and refined ways dominate the market, just as Princess Di, OJ, Clinton Lewinsky, and Elyon dominated the airwaves. Chapter 1. The First System Ever for the Management of Meaning. Advertising always has used archetypal imagery to market products. The Jolly Green Giant is, after all, the archetype of the green man, a figure associated with fertility and abundance. The judicious use of such symbolism can fuel a leading brand. Brand icons go further. It is not just that archetypal symbols and images are used to position the brand, but that, over time, the brand itself takes on symbolic significance. Ivory is not merely associated with innocence. It embodies it. Mothers wash their children with ivory not only to keep them safe from germs and irritating chemicals, but also because ivory just seems right for precious infants and toddlers. To comprehend the power of this phenomenon, we must understand the nature of symbols. Some symbols have the deepest religious or spiritual meaning. For example, within Christianity, baptism is the ritual of purification, while communion provides a ritual for the acceptance of divine grace. It would, of course, be sacrilegious to exploit any faith's particular symbolism in order to sell products. Yet both sacred and secular symbols of renewal exist on a continuum unified by an archetype. While the conscious power of a religious symbol is inordinately greater, the unconscious power of an archetype, even in an entirely secular context, is immense. Meaning as a brand asset. Understanding and leveraging archetypal meaning, once an interesting bonus to effective marketing, is now a prerequisite. Why? There was a time when successfully creating, building, and marketing brands required neither endless inspiration nor endless capital. Demand exceeded supply, and markets were uncluttered. In the main, products were physically different from each other, and brands were built on those differences. Such was the case for ages and ages in the marketing or selling world. But once competition reached a certain threshold, every business, whether a multinational cola company or a neighborhood dry cleaner, encountered a new challenge. No matter how effective the company's manufacturing and distribution systems, or how state-of-the-art its dry cleaning processes, its competitors could imitate or duplicate them. In this circumstance, businesses found that they had only two broad strategic routes to go: reduce their prices or imbue their products with meaning. Clearly, the creation and management of meaning was the more desirable option. Ironically, though, as critical as meaning has become, no system has been developed until now for understanding or managing the meaning of brands, be they products, services, companies, or causes. We have had manufacturing systems for producing products, message development systems for creating candidates' platforms, and business systems for marketing goods, but no system for managing what had become a brand's most leverageable asset. Why not? Partly because the need to manage meaning was a relatively new phenomenon. If you were the only soft drink in town, as you might be in, say, Hangzhou, China, you could market your product on the basis of its features and benefits. And if you were the only dry cleaner in the neighborhood, you could market your store on the merits of its convenience, environmentally sound packaging, and effective cleaning. However, in increasingly crowded and highly competitive categories, the cases in which brand differentiation could be based on discernible product differences became rare or non-existent, and even if a corporation was successful in creating a legitimate product-based point of difference, it was quickly imitated and duplicated by competitors. As early as 1983, Paul Hawken identified a profound change in the relative importance of product mass versus product meaning that required a corresponding shift in our business model. Soon after, Wall Street made a comparable discovery, whereupon whole corporations were acquired simply to obtain their powerhouse brands, even though other brands offered virtually identical products. Something new was happening. Hundreds of millions of dollars were being spent to purchase certain brands because they possessed a trait or property that was not fully understood and that caught the purchasers totally off guard. The truth was that these brands had become phenomenally valuable, not only because of their innovative features or benefits, but also because these properties had been translated into powerful meanings. They were worth millions of dollars because they had gained a kind of meaning that was universal, larger than life, iconic. Whether the new managers understood it consciously or not, they had become the stewards of archetypal brands. The meanings these brands hold are like primal assets that must be managed as carefully as financial investments, and most companies have not been prepared to do so because, quite simply, no system was available to guide them. Levi's, once a strong and clear explorer brand, drifted from outlaw to hero, back to explorer, then to regular guy or gal, then to jester, and sometimes presented a patchwork quilt of archetypal identities all at once, reflective of the confused management of both the parent and the sub-brands, 501, Five Pocket, Wide Leg. The company's market share declined accordingly. Nike, one of the great hero brands of all times, became cliched and self-conscious in that role and publicly demonstrated a loss of confidence, changing advertising agencies and brand managers when the real solution was to tap more deeply and surely into the hero's journey, a never-ending source of inspiration for the hero archetype. These companies had some of the most sophisticated and talented marketing professionals at their helms. Nevertheless, they lost their way. The result was chaos, similar to what would happen if CFOs tried to manage money by making everything up as they went along, without any system of financial management or accounting. Meaning management is relevant not only to the for-profit world. In a somewhat more subtle way, nonprofit organizations and political candidates face the same dilemma as the one we have just described. While a particular cause may seem unique to its advocates, potential contributors are besieged with requests for money. Their decision on which good cause to support is based largely on some sense that the meaning of a particular organization is the best fit with their values. Similarly, most candidates from the same party have at least similar stands on the issues. To get nominated, they must connect with voters in a way that offers the meaning promise appropriate to the particular time. John F. Kennedy did this effectively by invoking Camelot. The meaning of a brand is its most precious and irreplaceable asset. Whether you're selling a soft drink or a presidential candidate, what your brand means to people will be every bit as important as its function, if not more so, because it is meaning that tells us this one feels right or this one's for me. Meaning speaks to the feeling or intuitive side of the public. It creates an emotional affinity, allowing the more rational arguments to be heard. North Star Marketing. Marketing without a system for managing meaning is analogous to ancient navigators trying to find port in treacherous seas on a starless night. What they need is an enduring and reliable compass, a fixed place that illuminates both where they are and where they must go. For marketers, the theory of archetypes can act as this compass. We have written The Hero and the Outlaw to communicate the first system ever for the management of meaning, and like many sound ideas, it borrows from very ancient and eternal ones. Imprints, hardwired into our psyches, influence the characters we love in art, literature, the great religions of the world, and contemporary films. Plato called these imprints elemental forms and saw them as the idea structures that formed a template for material reality. Psychiatrist C.G. Jung called them archetypes. In the marketing world, we have had no comparable concept or vocabulary, yet brands are, in truth, among the most vibrant contemporary expressions of these deep and abiding patterns. Whether through conscious intent or fortunate accident, brands, be they candidates, superstars, products, or companies, achieve deep and enduring differentiation and relevance by embodying timeless archetypal meaning. In fact, the most successful brands always have done so. This phenomenon is not about borrowing meaning in an ephemeral advertising campaign, but rather becoming a consistent and enduring expression of meaning, essentially becoming a brand icon. Powerhouse products have done so. Nike, Coke, Ralph Lauren, Marlboro, Disney, and Ivory, to name a few. So have films, Star Wars, E.T. the Extraterrestrial, and Gone with the Wind, and personalities, Lady Di, Jackie O, Joe DiMaggio, and John Wayne. Brands that have achieved this status accidentally or as a result of fabulously gifted instinct have captured and held the imagination of the public. And if they are wise, their marketers have stayed the course simply because what their brands have come to represent resonates with the public so well and so consistently. But reliance on genius goes only so far and lasts only so long. Sooner or later, brands suffer from the fact that there has been no science related to the development and management of meaning. When business as usual takes over, there is no compass to guide the inevitable choices or decision points that determine a brand's fate. How to keep pace with the times without losing the brand's essence? How to survive fierce competitive assault?
Sample complete. Ready to continue?